Hey guys, the following podcast is a Lady Gang Network and Podcast One production, which means it's going to be awesome.
Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast about books and the people who read them. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and today we are joined again by Leah Koch, one of the founders of the Ripped Bodice bookstore in Los Angeles. Today we are discussing The Hating Game by Sally Thorne for The Stacks Book Club. Before we dive into the episode, please know there are spoilers. And now, a little housekeeping. All right, here it is, your weekly reminder. Everything we talk about on today's episode can be found in the show notes. There is a link there that will take you to all the books discussed today, as well as the social media accounts for The Stacks and our guests. Plus, if you shop through the links on Amazon, you're helping to keep The Stacks free. If you're looking for an amazing book recommendation, send us an email to askingthestacks@gmail.com. Myself and my guest will read it on air, discuss it, and then give you a personalized book recommendation or five. So email askingthestacks@gmail.com with your name, what you're looking for, and maybe a few titles you've loved or hated. If you like The Stacks and want to support the work we're doing, here are a few easy ways you can help. First of all, join us over on Patreon. That's a website where you support the work we're doing and earn perks for yourself. We've got a virtual book club, we got inside access to the show, and we have an amazing community of other readers who love the podcast. So head over to patreon.com/thestacks to join in. Another way to support the show is to support our sponsors like Audible. They are your go-to destination for all things audiobooks. Plus, if you listen to this show, you do get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download. So go to audibletrial.com/thestacks. The last thing you can do to help the show is definitely the easiest. Subscribe to The Stacks wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a rating and a review and tell your friends and family about the show. It goes a really long way to helping us reach new audiences. All right, now it's time for The Stacks Book Club conversation of The Hating Game by Sally Thorne with Leah Koch. All right, you guys, I am back again today with Leah Koch. She is one of the co-owners of The Ripped Bodice. It's The Stacks Book Club today, so we're discussing The Hating Game by Sally Thorne. What's crazy is this is the first time we've ever done romance, a romance book on the podcast. So Leah, welcome back.
Thank you. So excited.
You're our guide. We always start in the same place. Well, I guess we should talk. You know what? Let me back up for a second. First of all, we will spoil this book. If you have not read the book and you deeply care about what happens to these characters, please stop listening, finish reading, come back when you're ready. That's part one.
We'll be here.
We'll be here. This is out in the world now. Part two. The book is about, I should tell you what the book is about in case you're just listening because you're not going to read it or you've already read it or whatever. Refresher. The book is about, oh my God, what's her name?
Lucy.
The book is about Lucy Hutton. I remember her last name. Yeah. Horribly, don't remember her first name. She works at a publishing company with her nemesis, Josh or Joshua. And they sit at the same desk or like across from each other. They are assistants to the co-CEOs of a publishing company. They hate each other. Surprise. They start to like each other. That's pretty much the plot.
Yep.
As far as you need to know. What did you think of the book, Leah?
I mean, I kind of picked it. So I think that I liked it. I mean, it's one of my all time faves.
Okay.
That means you shouldn't be afraid to, you know, tell me what you didn't like about it.
But oh, I will.
It is one of my all time favorites. And I think a great place for beginner romance readers to start. There's not, it's not like crazy high concept. There's, as you said, the plot's like very simple. They're not having sex on page 10.
No.
They don't have sex till like pretty close to the
very
end.
Very late.
Yeah.
Pretty close. I was waiting for sex.
Pretty close to the end. So it's not like overly dirty. Not that we have a problem with that. So good place to start. I think that she captures the what people like about rom-coms so well. And as an extension of that, the whole we talked about last week, enemies to lovers trope,
right,
which super popular in romance. It's hard to do well because a lot of times I end up thinking, well, if they actually hate each other, like, why are they kissing right now? Like,
right.
I'm not generally a big fan of the we're fighting. Suddenly you've pushed me up against a wall and we're kissing, because I'm like, okay, but how did you know that the other person wanted that to happen? And are like, you just said you hated each other.
Right.
So they definitely do fall out of the hate part before they start.
Well, no.
Sort of. It depends.
It's because the elevator scene.
Right. Oh, right. There is that part.
There's a part where he picks her up.
Oh, he does push her up against the wall and kiss her. Okay, I forgot about that part. I just reread it.
And then
yesterday.
Gives her a ride to her date with like boring Borefest. Bitter Borefest Danny. Poor Danny. What a boring guy.
Poor Danny. But I actually think Danny is like a good character because he has some like traits that are ostensibly supposed to be charming, but like are actually not.
Right.
It's hard to write chemistry.
Right.
You know, chemistry is easier to
see. Yeah.
100%. In a movie. And it can be hard. I frequently will write after I finish a book, like they didn't have any chemistry or they had great chemistry. Like it's a hard thing to write.
It's hard. Yeah.
And I definitely think she does that pretty well. What did you think?
Okay. So I was very nervous about reading it because I wanted to really like it.
Yeah.
And I actually liked it. I don't think I like really liked it, but I've also not read romance, so I have nothing to compare it to except for watching rom-coms, mm-hmm. which I love, and then all the other reading that I do, which is pretty far away from this.
Yeah.
So that being said, I liked it. I thought it was super predictable, but I think that that's okay.
Yeah.
I think that's maybe like how it goes, just like when you sit down to watch a rom-com. Like when I started Crazy Rich Asians, I knew that Hottie and Hottie were going to be together at the end.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was going to happen on the airplane, but spoiler. But I knew. Like, I wasn't.
I mean, the point of a romance novel is not, are they going to get together? As
right.
we discussed last week, if you know it's a romance novel, you know they're going to get together
right.
because that's the definition.
But like, so in my mind, I thought Danny would have a bigger part. Like, I thought Danny would be more, there would be a bigger fight,
yeah.
you know? And I thought that, like, I knew that Josh was in love with her long before she did, which I was kind of like, come on. I was like, Lucy, girl, like, hello. He's staying in bed with you while you're vomiting. Like, your enemy doesn't do that. Like, your good friend probably doesn't even do that. Maybe your best friend, but, like, your good platonic friend.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, there was stuff like that I was like, this is, like, a little predictable for me. But I found myself really, like, I enjoyed it. Once I kind of let go of, like, this isn't what I normally read, I was like, this is fun. Like, I'm having a good time. And I also felt like I understand why people read romance more, at least this kind of romance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this rom-com book, it was a fun thing to be reading instead of watching MSNBC impeachment news.
Unbelievable.
Right? Like, I was like, this is so not, like,
I wonder why.
My husband was in one room and I could hear whatever sports and, which I love, and MSNBC, which I also love. And I was in the bedroom, like, wrapped up in my little blankie with my pillows, and I was just reading.
Yeah.
And it was like total escapism. And I got that part of it. And I think of the whole experience of reading my first romance novel, that was the most gratifying.
Oh, that's good. I'm glad.
Yeah. So, like, that's just, so, I mean, it means that the book worked.
Yeah.
I have a lot of questions/thoughts about the role of men in romance books
totally.
Directed towards women.
Totally.
Or heterosexual
yeah.
romances.
Let's just, like, blanket statement say right now, this book is about a man and a woman, so we'll, like, generally talk about that while still understanding that there are plenty of people who do not fit into those descriptions
right.
and that queer romance is a thing and
right.
that we could have a whole separate conversation about
totally.
That, but let's just blanket say that now.
For this conversation.
For the purposes of this discussion.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about one man and one woman.
Right. Because, like, I guess there is a fantasy in sexy relationships that someone does throw you up against a wall. And that
for
that's
some
something, like that that's like a trope.
Uh-huh.
We talked about tropes. Like, that's something that people might be turned on by. And today, in 2019... I feel like I just, when that scene happened in the elevator, I was like, this is rapey, you know? And like,
yeah.
like, and it was, that was like a moment where I was like, I want to be liking them kissing, but this feels super rapey to me. And I didn't like that.
I think that's an incredibly valid thing to feel. I think in particular, because they're in a professional setting.
Right.
And
they joke about HR and I'm like, I worked in corporate America. I'm like, that's not funny.
Right. So yes, I agree. I would say I almost like glossed over that scene, and I literally reread the book yesterday. The interesting thing to me is that because we're in her head, we know that she doesn't feel that way.
Right.
So I do think that's like a good way to
protect from
get around that.
Yeah.
And I've certainly read scenes like that in other books where I didn't know that because it was in third person or his perspective or whatever. So I do think because it's in her perspective and she's doesn't have a problem with it, or I mean she does, but like because she's like confused, not because she's like,
right,
you're violating me.
Right.
Yeah. And it's interesting because I almost feel like I blocked that scene out because I feel like then the sort of progression of when she goes over to his apartment a couple of days in a row and like he doesn't like take things further physically, I really like.
Me too.
And it's very like, I don't know what the right, maybe affirming or whatever the word is. So yeah, maybe I blocked that scene out too much.
Yeah, you were like, this scene is slightly problematic. Let's pretend like it didn't happen.
Let's pretend like it didn't happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say, and give me 30 seconds. Don't like.
Okay.
romance has tons of problematic things in its past. Tons of them. We'll talk about racism later. But in terms of, especially in terms of things like rape, in the books of like the 70s, a lot of them start with rape, because
rape as in the book is acknowledging it as rape, or rape as in things that are unconsensual?
Both.
Okay.
Both. It depends.
Okay.
But for the purposes of this, let's say rape acknowledged as rape, because she's then been deflowered and then she can then embark on a sexual relationship with someone else without waiting for marriage because she's been deflowered, which is like, what a great fucking concept. And I think there are some people who would prefer to ignore the past of romance. And while I could sometimes be one of them, I generally think it's good to like acknowledge where the genre came from and how things are being reinterpreted.
Hmm.
Yeah, that's my mini romance history lecture.
That's so interesting. Because there's some of the gender, it's not even gender norms, but some of the shit, like Lucy being so sad and such a loser because she's alone. Like some of that stuff, I'm like, girl, you just single. Like, yeah. You'll be fine. Apparently you're hot. Every dude that comes across Lucy in the book, from the delivery man to Danny to Josh, she doesn't know Josh, but they all think she's super hot. And then she's sitting there being like, I'm such a loser. Like, I never got on dates. And I'm like, you walked up to someone after you made up a date and said, go out with me. And he said, yes. Like, you're fine, Lucy.
Yeah.
Like, you need some confidence. You need a therapist. You need some confidence. Okay. And then you put your black dress on and you get thrown up against a wall. Like, girl, you are doing something right. You 5-foot girl.
Every single character in every romance novel ever needs a therapist. Anytime there's a therapist in romance, I'm like, yes. And you are starting to see them more.
Oh,
but like,
so
anytime I'm like the hero or the heroine is like doing something annoying, I'm like, you need a therapist.
Right. Like you need someone to talk. Like her friend Valerie, who like broke up with her because of whatever. I'm like, we needed Valerie because we needed the, what's her name? Judy Greer. We needed the Judy Greer. She needed it.
Yeah. I mean, I do think it's an interesting convention that she doesn't have any friends.
Right.
So the interesting thing I feel like with a lot of romances, and in particular with heroines, it's, first of all, people are 100 times harder on heroines than heroes.
Mm.
We see it all the time online. People are like, oh my God, this heroine is so whatever, whether it's stupid or annoying or bossy or whatever.
Right.
And then the hero like saves a kitten and they're like, oh my God, he's the most amazing person ever.
Right.
So that's one thing to be noted. But the thing I've noticed, and this is in particular, most of the places I talk with people about romance are in our book clubs at the store, or obviously just with people, but like book club is a, you know, regular
setting, of course.
And the thing I run into a lot is basically exactly what you just said, which is that people want the heroines to be these kick-ass, confident, incredible women. And then when they are that, they're like, this isn't realistic enough.
Mm.
Like she doesn't have any like struggle or whatever.
Interesting.
So, you know, it's a little hard It's such a fine line to walk. Right. And I've read books where I'm like, this heroine is stupid. Like my favorite word is like, she's a twit. She's like, she's always like getting lost. And I'm like,
Lucy's not that.
No, she's not a twit. And I do think, there's a decent amount of growth over the book. I do think she can be a little annoying at the beginning.
Yeah.
And that but again, it's like the thing is she's like setting up a point, which is like there's the scene where one of her, it's not someone who reports to her, but she's like a coworker.
Yeah, she like turns in a report to her.
Right. Is like asking for an extension for no real reason. And she kind of caves in and gives it to her, even though she has to stay late. And you're like, you're so annoying. And it's like the thing where she's like, I don't have any friends and I like can't get a date. And you're like, what is wrong with you?
Like, but just try.
But I do think you need that if you're going to have somewhere to go.
Right. That's true.
And there certainly are romances where the heroine is like that from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
However, then I think it becomes more, you then need more external conflict. Like, this is mostly internal conflict.
Yeah. Most of this book is her trying to decide if she's really going to like Josh.
Right. And it's, you know, it was interesting. I give my brother a romance like every, I don't know, year or so. I'm like, this is your yearly brotherly duty for the year. You can read one. And he'd read a football one that I really liked.
Ooh.
Then we talked about it and he said something I thought was really interesting. He's like, there are so few characters in this. He's like, it's really just about the two of them. And I was like, yeah that's kind of what romance is about. Like, they have like, there's like, again, and in this book, there's like, her parents, his brother, the bosses, the occasional other person, the romantic foil, but it's really,
it's just pretty much
pretty much about them.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, I want to be fair since we picked on Lucy.
Yes. Great. Let's pick on Josh.
Let's pick on Josh because Josh sounds really hot.
Yeah.
I'm interested in what Josh looks like in real life. I know that he has blue eyes. And so in my mind, he looked like Jesse Williams.
Oh,
but he's white on the cover. So
yeah,
I'm like,
who cares?
But, like, I don't fucking care. Like, Jesse Williams has blue eyes. Therefore,
great
here we
fucking
are.
Choice. Are you aware that this is being made into a movie. It's already been cast.
I do. The girl who's playing Lucy is also named Lucy.
I know.
Lucy Hale.
And I think she's a pretty good physical fit. I'm concerned that Robbie Amell, who's the guy, is a little bit too slick.
I did not know who any of these people were.
Well, you probably did not watch the CW in the 2010 to 2019 years. Like I
correct.
Did.
correct. But so in my mind, I have Jesse Williams going because like that's the hottest
great
guy I know with blue eyes.
Choice.
So my husband has brown eyes because if he had brown eyes, then I would have said I imagine my husband. But because he had to have blue eyes, I had to imagine Jesse Williams.
What? You know, I think it's a pretty weird quirk of me. I think this is very unusual in romance that I never picture anybody.
What?
Everyone like always comes in and they're like talking about their dream casting or whatever. I'm like, I've never thought about it. I don't know. For some reason, I think it's because I'm not a visual reader. There's no picture in my head.
Got it. See, I cast even for just any fiction book.
Really?
Yeah. And if I'm reading nonfiction, I'll look up the person. Like, I like
just
to know.
I don't know. I just don't do that.
That's so interesting.
But I really like your choice of Jesse Williams.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's beautiful.
He is
so beautiful.
Really beautiful.
So, okay. So let's talk shit about Josh for
a
second.
Great.
So
go for it.
We talked about Josh being a little assaulty in that first moment.
Yeah.
And I also feel like Josh, like, there wasn't a lot going on with Josh that we're told about, except for that he works out a lot and is like got a great, like, and then he's kind of mean. And then like, I didn't get the appeal of Josh.
Mm-hmm.
And I love a contentious, flirty relationship like that. Before I was married, like, that was my go-to back in my heyday when I was hitting on boys in New York City. Like, that was my move. So I get that. But I didn't feel that from Josh. I was like, this is actually just an asshole. This would be a guy that I'd try to flirt with and be like, you're hot, but you're an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, I hate you.
I still think it's, like, pretty flirty. That might just be, like, a personal thing.
Right.
I think what's interesting with him is that all of the character stuff is really happening in, like, the last third.
I think that's what it is. It's like I'd already formed too much of an opinion about these people. And then when she kind of like shifted who they really were, I was like, yeah, but like they didn't let that show early enough for me.
So I think you just get so much more information when they go to the wedding.
Right. And then the wedding. So Josh's brother, Patrick, is getting married, which everyone's a doctor in Josh's family, but him, because Josh is a failure because he's not a doctor.
Right. We know that he dropped out of med school.
Yeah. And
that his
parents are doctors.
And he kind of says like his parents aren't wild about it, but you don't really know.
Right. And then Lucy gets sick. She has a flu. She's throwing up everywhere.
I think it's food poisoning.
Whatever. She's ill. She can't get better. She's disgusting. She's wearing a sleepy sore shirt. I'm like, Lucy, girl, you so sick. Like, just take some fluids. Go to the doctor. What are you doing? Anyway, so Josh Stacy helps her in the middle of the night. He calls his brother.
That is so tropey. The whole, like, the thing that makes us reveal our true feelings is that one of us is injured or ill, right, and the other one has to take care of them. I cannot tell you.
Or also, does that happen a lot, like when they get drunk? I feel like that's tropey in the movies. It's absolutely. Like someone drinks
you
too
can
much.
Only tell, say your true feelings when you're drunk.
Yeah. So then, so Patrick comes over, the brother, and he helps her, and they cure her, they think, or whatever, they give her medicine. And then we overhear a conversation about Patrick's wedding that Josh doesn't want to go to. And I don't want to toot my own horn, but I knew instantly. I was like, the fuck, he's marrying his girlfriend. Like, I was like, this is so obvious.
I think the first time I read it, I knew like pretty soon.
Because why else do you not want to go? And does your brother say you can bring a date? Like, you know, whatever. So we come to, so Lucy agrees, or Lucy as a favor to Josh for
helping her,
with her illness, her food poisoning. She says she'll go with him to the wedding, but it's out of town, so they have to have a weekend away.
Oh, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Where do you think this book takes place?
Well, I looked up where the author was from, and it said she was from Australia, so I just assumed it was parts of Australia I didn't know.
Okay.
Is that correct?
No and yes.
Okay.
It's funny to me to ask people, because I think, here's my guess, so Sally is Australian. It's an American publisher. My guess is she wrote it to be Melbourne or Sydney. And they were like, you have to make it either New York or just a generic city.
Yeah, because it felt, I was imagining probably New York-y or Chicago, because she didn't say New York.
No detail. It's very generic, just like city. And then they like go to the like country.
Yeah, there's a name for the country, but it was like,
oh, yeah.
It was like West
Bell Harbor or something. I don't remember.
It was Nantucket.
Yes, let's call it
for
Nantucket.
You. So then they go to the wedding, and then they like,
so she doesn't know. She doesn't understand
what she's walking into.
She's so uptight about this wedding. And she does ask.
Yeah, she asks multiple times, which she withholds from her.
Yeah.
And then,
which I do not like, but
I do not like that either.
There is
but
a point.
I do feel like he does make his point why he did it. And I think he probably did the right thing, though I would not have been happy.
Yeah. It's like one of my biggest pet peeves in romance is when the plot hinges on someone's inability to open their mouth.
Right.
I don't like that. This is a pretty rare exception where I'm like, I could see it.
Yeah, they make that work.
It's pretty. It's like a kind. At least the way he sees it, it's like a pretty humiliating thing that he like doesn't want to tell her. I think it's a little weird that he doesn't think she's ever going to find out.
I think so too.
When she goes to this person's wedding, but I do get that. Keep going.
Okay, so we get to the wedding. They still have not had sex, you guys. This is deep into the book, and like, look,
because they haven't had sex because...
Well, she was throwing up once. I'm just kidding.
Well, there was that. But because she says it's only going to happen one time.
Yes, she has put this, it's only going to happen one time, because she's still under this idea that it's hate sex.
Right.
And that it's not, that they don't like each other. Because Lucy is slightly in denial. But that's partially because she doesn't have a therapist or any friends to like
talk
it out.
And we haven't mentioned yet, they are competing for the same job.
Oh, which is important.
It's very important.
To talk about. Another part of the book. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're both assistants to the CEO, but there's two different CEOs because there's a merger at this publishing house.
Right.
And there's going to be a COO that basically they are the two most qualified people for. And so they're directly competing with each other. So she also like doesn't really want to have sex before. I don't know if it's like before that or like.
She doesn't want to have sex. She doesn't want to be in a relationship with him because then
one of them is going
to
leave.
One of them either has to quit or will be the subordinate of the other. And then they can't be in a relationship. But at the time, that's not really a thing because they still hate each other.
Right.
Anyway, so they get to this wedding. They don't have sex still. Then Lucy meets everyone. The dad's an asshole.
Yeah.
The dad is like basically Josh grown up. So just like more horrible, like set in his ways, cranky, crabby. He doesn't really like Josh. And that's what we think is that's what we're supposed to think is the main problem with the wedding. Is
right.
That the dad is disappointed in Josh.
Because she keeps asking about a quote unquote scandal, thinking that the scandal is when he dropped out of med school, and he doesn't really correct her.
Right. Exactly. So then we learn about then basically Mindy, who's the bride, and she's gorgeous. She's a blonde.
What
she's
a great
tall.
Blonde
she has brown hair. Okay. But I kept imagining Mindy Kaling because that's the only Mindy I actually think of.
It's a very Nantucket-y kind of name.
Mindy, for sure. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like Cameron Diaz in My Best Friend's Wedding, except for with brown eyes. Because eyes are, I keep mentioning eyes because honestly, Sally Thorne talks about people's eye color only casually 7,000 times.
It's not
in this
a
book.
Sally Thorne thing. It's a romance thing.
The eye color
the
thing.
The eye color thing is.
Holy shit. Yeah, who knew?
There's this whole thing about violet-eyed air heroines. That's a huge romance thing that I literally have never thought about until exactly this minute. It's just because the physical descriptions of the people are like so important. So it's eyes, it's smell. I don't know if you noticed how often she talks about how good he smells.
I didn't really.
We do a romance bingo every summer.
Okay.
Where we like make a board and like a lot of the categories are like really funny things. And like one year we had like the guy smells like a tree.
Okay.
Because at some point she's like, he smells like pine trees.
Right.
It's just like, I think it's because it's a written medium. They're like really trying to give you a visual.
Right.
But yeah, that's like a super romance thing.
Okay,
and lots of descriptions like about his muscles.
So many muscles.
Yeah, that's.
And there was a little bit about chest hair.
That's a real romance.
But a lot of eyes, like so much eyes. Yeah. I was like, okay, cool.
And her eyes too. He loves her eyes.
Their eyes. You would think that having blue eyes was like being a billionaire. It was that valuable because they talk about it so much. I was like, okay, get it. We're going to get to her eyes. Don't you worry, because that is a whole I have a lot of questions about Josh. Anyways, so Mindy, the bride, on her wedding day, she's nothing better to do than just to casually mention, you know, Josh and I used to date, which, of course, Lucy did not know, throws the whole book into, you know, Josh is just pretending to like me and I like Josh and whatever. Then this leads to them having a huge conversation. Finally, the sex.
Yes.
They come together all the time. Every time. Like three times. Come together always.
There's a lot of sex.
Josh basically tells her the reason he didn't tell her is because he didn't want her to think that that was the only reason that she was there. Because we come to find out, as everyone has told Lucy, her boss, and Boring Danny, that Josh is in love with her. But Lucy can't see it, which I get. I feel that. That doesn't seem too far-fetched to me. Mm-hmm. That's real. But we know as the audience that Josh loves her. So we believe Josh when he says he didn't want to tell her for that reason.
And he also says he didn't want to tell her because his last few girlfriends have all basically told him that he has a shitty personality.
Right.
Because, and you know, I felt that because I think in his mind it would be like, okay, so he's like, okay, so she dumped me. I feel like Lucy's first question is probably going to be why?
Right.
And he doesn't want to be like, well, because I was kind of an asshole. Because the thing is, he does know, and he knows they weren't a good fit. He's not like heartbroken over it or anything.
Right.
But I think that he feels like he's changed, but he definitely feels like he's a different kind of person with Lucy.
Yeah. And everyone mentions it, the mom, the brother.
Yeah. And so I get wanting to preserve that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Just I'm not wanting her to think he's an asshole.
Right.
I do. One of the things I do really like about this book is there's a lot of discussion about his personality in general and sort of the differences between being an asshole, being good at your job, you know, wanting other people to like you, not caring if other people like you. And one of my favorite parts of the book is sort of this revelation that he's shy.
Right.
And that and that nobody knows that, and that he has a lot of defense mechanisms
right.
against that, which make him seem like an asshole. So right. and there are definitely times when he is an asshole.
For sure.
But I think it's an there is a lot of interesting discussion about like the differences between, and again, and this comes back to your whole gender thing about when he's allowed to be an asshole and when she's allowed to be an asshole.
Right.
And I just think that's so relevant to today's society.
Well, right.
And just like, I mean, just the, so we talked about the woman who calls and asks for the extension, and then later in the book, she does it again. And she finally like gets up her courage or whatever to say no, but it really, it's really hard. B, it like doesn't go well. Like the, no. It does change the woman's perspective of her. And yeah. I just like, as someone who has to say no to people a lot, yeah. I really felt that.
I thought that was like one of the best scenes of the book.
One of the things we didn't talk about last week when we were talking about the less glamorous parts of owning a bookstore is just the amount of things that people ask you for.
Mm-hmm.
And some of which are like related to what you do.
Right.
Like, do you want to be on my podcast?
Thank you for saying yes.
And some of which aren't, which those ones are easy to say no to. But, you know, it's just like, you know, carry my book or can I have an event at your store? And it can be really hard to say no to people in a way that, and again, this is not always possible, in a way that like doesn't leave you feeling bad about yourself because they now hate you.
Right.
So I just, I felt that like, and also that like you almost, she wants to feel like triumphant. Like, yes, I finally stood up to her, but actually she kind of feels shitty.
Right.
Cause like,
well, cause she says a mean thing. She's like, well, you're single and you don't have a family. So what do you need to go home
I
for?
I know.
It's like, listen
like
here, bitch.
Such a bitch.
Like, listen.
And it's like, but I, it is that like kind of familiar feeling of like, yeah, it's like it is kind of a moment of triumph, but like also you kind of feel shitty because like someone was mean to you.
Yeah.
And like now you know that she like doesn't like you anymore.
Right. And you know that it was all bullshit in the first place. And she like, only liked you because you were doing
right.
for her.
And like, and you know, girls are trained to believe that the most important thing is whether someone likes you.
Right. But it's not.
It's not.
For girls listening now, it's not.
It's not.
It's not at all. People are not going to like you. Surprise, surprise. Okay. Let's talk about this. Lucy's eyes.
And then I want
to shift away from blue eyes to other color eyes.
Great.
Am I the only person that thinks that Josh is just truly the deeply creepiest person for having an actual bedroom painted the color of the eyes of her?
It's a little creepy.
And then he's like, you don't recognize this color? And she's like, it's Robin Egg's blue. And he's like, looks at her. And then she's like, oh, it's my eye color.
Listen, I will totally grant you. It is
so creepy.
So cheesy.
I wish she had violet eyes so his room was violet because that would have been amazing.
Yeah, but real people don't have violet eyes. That's the whole point.
That's fair.
I mean, listen, I will grant you. It is cheesy as shit.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you're in the right mindset, it's like
sure.
can be sweet.
I guess. I was just like, dude, what if this did not work out? What if he slammed her up against the wall and this turned out to not be a romance and she was like, fuck you, I'm calling HR, you're fired, and he goes home to his blue eye room. Like,
then he would repaint it.
Yeah, he sure would. Because like, okay, Josh was like all... Josh, for some, was a great people reader, I guess, because he knew she was all in pretty much. I mean, he quits his job.
Yeah, but that doesn't have to do with the romance.
Does it so that they can be together.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's how I read it. He also hates his boss. We kind of find out later on.
I mean, he does it. Yes. He definitely does do it to give them a shot. But he also, I mean, I think he also does it because it's like her dream job.
Right.
And it's
but
not
it's about
his.
Her. Like,
yeah.
He does it for her.
Yeah.
And at the point when he does it, they're not together, and she's saying we're only going to have sex.
That's what makes it a grand gesture.
It is a grand gesture,
and he doesn't know.
I think that if I was watching this book, I would be less nitpicky. But yeah. what you're saying, like what you had said about we spend more time with totally. Books. You were saying this about crying last week. We spend more time with books. And so sometimes it's harder to get that full like emotional feeling.
Totally.
I think that's the thing, especially knowing that I was reading this for a conversation about it. So I'm like looking at every little thing and thinking of about course. What everything means.
Yeah.
But I think this will make a fantastic movie. Like, I think I'll be totally entertained.
I'm excited. Yeah.
I can't wait to see it. Like, so I don't necessarily think a lot of the things that that irked me
right.
actually did.
Like, and also I think like the paintball scene is like, that's hard to write. And you're like,
so
what's
hard.
Going on?
Like, I was like, pick a different activity,
I know.
Sally.
I was like, I don't care like who's shooting who, but I do think that'll be pretty funny on screen.
Yeah. I think some of this will be so good on screen. Okay. We're shifting. I've been teasing this since last week. I want to talk about diversity and romance.
Yeah.
Because you guys here at the Ripped Bodice have put together a survey, a study of the diversity in publishing. So this is specifically talking about books that are published by publishers and not self-published books.
Correct.
And about the racial diversity.
Correct.
So I want you, first of all, to just kind of tell us why you guys thought to actually do this.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. And the reason that I'm talking about this, sorry, one last thing. The reason that I'm bringing this up is because this book that we've read this week by Sally Thorne, a white woman, stars two white people and an office of people who are potentially could be of color, but it's not
never,
mentioned. We don't know.
There's never a character of color mentioned.
There's never a character of color mentioned. We hear a lot about blue eyes. We hear a lot about blonde hair.
Yeah.
We hear a lot about white features and traits.
Absolutely.
So I'm
and I
curious
would say what's an interesting conversation in romance right now, and we're going to get back to the report in a second, but I just want to mention this really quickly. I have no desire to see her change that. I think there's an interesting conversation right now, which is that white women are trying to write people of color, and a lot of authors of color are saying, don't do that.
Don't do that.
Because you suck at it.
Sure.
So it's not necessary. So again, this leads into the point of the report is not about the characters. People often are like, well, what about when white women write black characters? It doesn't count. It's not the same thing.
Right.
Because we're talking about money. This is about money. And
people's livelihoods, who is getting
published.
We're talking
published. About the people who are getting paid, not the people on the page. And it's also about money because I always tell people, we do not do this out of the goodness of our hearts. It's not because we're great people. We do this because we believe that we could be making more money and that publishers are stopping us from doing that because they're not giving us what we need to make more money.
Which is basically you're saying that people buy books by authors of color
Correct.
That are romance.
Correct. Our bestsellers are always by authors of color. So
give us a few titles.
Well, so you can go
recently.
You can go look up the report from last year. This one this year isn't out yet, but we put the top 10 best-selling books in the Ripped Bodice, and I think last year was 70% authors of color. So a couple we mentioned last week, which were new last year, so Kiss Quotient, A Study in Scarlet Women by Sherry Thomas. Jasmine Guillory writes rom-coms.
I found out that I know her.
Oh, really?
Well, kind of. Her sister and I went to high school together.
Oh, that's so funny.
I had no idea. Anyways.
That's funny. Alicia Rye is writing similar rom-com-y. Although her last series is more serious. This series is more rom-com-y. Anyway, the point being, to actually answer your question. Okay, why did we do this? It's just, I really think it's just important to say and acknowledge that romance has a really terrible history of inclusion in literally any way you want to interpret that. And a lot of times a history of really blatantly racist ideas and actions and all of that. So if you've ever felt like you weren't welcome in romance, you didn't make that up.
Right.
It's real. People are working really hard to change that. But I just want to say that, like, it's not in your head.
Right.
So when we opened, pretty quickly, we were aware that there was a problem before we opened, but it was, we were just like readers. So it wasn't like really, it wasn't our job yet. And I think there's only so much you can be aware of the problem without experiencing it in the way that we did, which is people asking for books with people who look like them, and you can give them maybe one option, maybe two options, and then that's it.
Okay.
So the question became, what can we do to contribute to the conversation that is missing Because no one needed us to add our voices to the conversation without something to contribute.
Right.
There was no need for us to be like, yeah, we think this is a problem too. That would have done nothing.
Right.
Because authors of color and readers of color have been working on this for decades since romance started. So I spent some time thinking and listening, and in particular listening to how publishers were talking and responding to authors being like, you're racist. And the thing I realized was missing was hard data.
I see.
And as much as I'm not really a math person, I am really a fan of hard numbers that you can't argue with. And so, because the two problems, this was in 2016, I think. So in 2016, we were still arguing about whether it was actually a problem, because they were still coming back with publishers or white readers or authors who didn't want to listen were like, it's not as bad as you guys are saying it is. That's problem number one. Problem number two is publishers were saying, we're working on it.
Mm.
There's no way to prove that they're lying, which right. they were. I know. I proved it. So right. So hard data. We want numbers so that we can compare it year over year so that we can, first of all, prove that there's a problem. And if you say you're working on it, okay, your number better be going up.
By 2019, we better see a difference.
Exactly. So now if your number has gone down or hasn't to change and you're like, you're working on it, guess what? You're lying.
You're not working on it.
I enjoy using the word lying.
Yeah.
So that's what we do. It's incredibly simple on purpose. We want it to be very easy to understand and digest. And so what it is, every publisher, there's 20 publishers, and the list changes a little bit each year as publishers close. We like right. replace them with other ones. We've had a couple close since we started doing this, but it's basically the 20 biggest publishers of romance. And there's one question. It's, how many books did you publish this year that were written by a person of color? We include Native American people in that category, which there's some debate about whether you're supposed to or not. We err on the side of doing that. And I know that person of color isn't a really catch-all term for that. In the report, it goes into a little bit more detail about that.
You can find the report on their website.
Yeah. It's on the homepage. There's a button that says diversity report. You click on that. There's 3 years so far. So we do it for the previous year. It comes out the first Tuesday in March the following year.
Okay. So it'll be out in a few weeks when you're listening to it.
Yes. You won't have to wait very long. I will have already been working on it for several months. Each publisher gets one percentage number, and for the most part, it's usually around about 8% is about the average right now. And that's that. And then we break it down and we do some graphs and cool stuff. And then as the years go on, we compare it to previous years. The more data we have, the more, you know, it can say, right. here's what we did 2016, 17, 18, 19, et cetera. And
have you guys noticed a difference for the positive?
No.
Okay.
Overall, there has been basically zero net change in the 3 years that we've been doing this.
Have you noticed a difference in the way that the publishers respond to you?
Not really. No. Silence is pretty much silence.
Okay.
No matter what way.
Well, because you said in the beginning they were saying like, oh, we're working on it. So I wasn't sure if they're now like...
I mean,
like,
they've basically stopped saying that. I mean, I still think everything they're doing is lip service, though. There've been two different publishers announced in the fall that they were doing like these like contests for like diverse voices for like mentorship programs or whatever. Ugh. And I'm like, just do, like, why do you have to do that? Just do it. Like,
or just publish a person's book and see if it sells.
It's just, and like, yeah. So I still think most of what they're doing is lip service. The thing is, now that I have these numbers, I don't care. All I care about is the number. You want to convince me you're doing it, the number goes up. That's it.
Right.
I don't care about what you're saying. I don't care about, truly don't care about anything else. And I really don't care about the book at all.
Right. Well, because also part of it is like, you could write, the same book could be written and published by five publishers, let's say, the exact same book. And depending on how much the publisher believes in it or is willing to put money behind it or is willing to put a good cover artist behind it or whatever, that book could be successful with the exact same words.
I mean, and I could spend an hour and a half talking about that.
I just don't think, I think that sometimes people think that just because a book is published, it means that it's getting the same resources.
Oh, yeah, no.
And so you could easily improve your number actually without...
Well, it's very interesting that you said that, because actually what they're doing is the opposite. And this is something that it's hard to explain to people because it's super inside baseball.
Okay.
So I'll try.
Okay.
But what's interesting is that they're putting more resources and marketing dollars behind books by authors of color, but the number hasn't changed. And so basically what you need to know is that publishers have books that are front list,
right,
and books that are not, or mid list. And front list is like the books that are getting the most marketing dollars. Okay, so let's say the Stacks publishing company is going to put out 100 books in 2019. Your sales team and your marketing team is going to pick 10 front list titles that you're going to go to conventions and you're going to print paper arcs to send out to 2,000 independent bookstores, and you're going to do blogging tours, and you're going to get your authors on podcasts, and you're really, it's not to say you're completely ignoring the other books, but this is where your dollars and cents are going.
Right.
So for a long time, authors of color were not getting those dollars. And do not mistake me, this is a good thing. We absolutely want that.
Right.
So, okay, so let's say in 2016, the Stacks publishing company had 8 books written by authors of color, and 2 of them were front list. 2019, you still have the same 8 books, but now all 8 of them are front list. So to the casual observer,
it looks like you've done a better job.
It looks like your number has gone up, because those are the books that the most people are seeing. The most eyeballs are on front list titles on Instagram, on book bloggers and stuff like that. And you're like, oh, Stacks Publishing is improving so much.
Right.
In reality, their number hasn't changed at all.
Right.
They're just giving more visibility, which again is
a good thing.
Do not mistake me. We want that. However, you're still not actually changing the baseline problem. And the reality is, in order for there to actually be change, there need to be authors of color that you haven't heard of.
Right. Well, and also, if that's working for them, because here's the truth, like you said, it's all about money. So if them putting all their resources behind the 8 books by people of color and those books are doing well, that means that there's a market for those books. Mm-hmm. So it's silly for them not to then bring on 8 mid-list authors.
Right.
Like the idea that if these books were getting all the resources and then were shitty and nobody was buying them and they'd keep doing that is ridiculous, and that's not how life is, especially in business. So, I mean, yes, it's great. I hear you and I agree with you. It's great to give resources to books by authors of color, but if there is no mid-list people.
Right. The thing is that the reality is that I can name every single author of color at, say, Avon Books, which is one of the largest romance publishers. I can name every single author of color because it's like 5. Wow. I shouldn't be able to do that. I can't name every white author because there's a bunch that publish like cowboy romances that I've never heard of.
Right.
There need to be ones that I don't know about.
Right. Right. Totally.
And again, this is another problem which authors of color talk about all the time. You have to be great.
Right.
You can't just be good.
You can't just be good.
You have to be phenomenal.
Well, that's across the board for people of color. I'm sure you've heard the phrase. I mean, I was raised with it. You have to be twice as good to get half as far.
Of course. So you have, your first book has to sell as well as a white author's 10th book.
Right.
Otherwise, you're not getting a publishing contract.
Right. Okay. Yikes. So all that being said, we'll wrap up on the hating game. We just have to talk about the cover and the title.
Okay.
What do you think of those two things?
The cover is a really interesting thing from a bookselling perspective, because this book came out in
2016 or 17. Okay.
So it was one of the first illustrated covers of this generation. So if you remember, like, kind of Shopaholic era,
Like 90s,
like very late 90s, like 99, 2000, that illustrated covers were a thing. And then they fell out of fashion.
Right.
And they've come back in fashion, in a big way now, but I think Hating Game was like ahead of the game. Mm. I think if this book came out now, people would say the cover was boring.
Yeah.
But at that point, it was not.
Yeah.
It was like graphic and interesting and different. Now, if you compare it to a lot of illustrated covers, it's not that interesting.
Right.
It's just two people. But at the time,
who don't have blue eyes on the cover, just in case anybody was curious.
But the book is teal. Why isn't the book Robin's Egg blue? I haven't even thought of that. It
should be blue. Somebody should have blue eyes on the cover.
It's teal.
What about the title?
You know, for me, it's so, I could care less about the title.
Truly.
I just think that I truly think the cover has the title. Honestly, in this case, the title has more to do with the book than it normally does. Hmm. For the most part, romance titles are complete gibberish. They're just like words. They're just like the love that flirts with the Duke of the Son of the Sinner of the Cowboy hero heroine in the play. They're just, it's gibberish.
Okay.
They just put words together because they're all the same.
Mm.
So I would say this title actually has a decent amount to do with the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, I truly, like, when I'm deciding, like, whether to buy something, I don't give a shit about the title. I give a lot of shit about the cover, but, unless the title was like, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to think of something, but unless the title has something racist in it, which they did.
Right.
The Sheik's Virgin Bride.
I see.
Savage Love.
Right, right, right. Okay.
By the way, they still publish things like The Sheik's Virgin Bride.
Mm-hmm. I believe that.
Okay. I don't really care about the title.
No, I don't care for this title at all, but the title. But I like the cover a lot.
Yeah.
I'm drawn to the illustrated romance cover.
Yeah. I think a lot of people are.
It's cute.
And I like the teal.
Because it feels rom-com-y.
Aside from the whole blue discussion,
I like the teal too, and the yellow.
A lot of the illustrated covers have red or pink undertones, which I fucking love pink. Look at the store. But right. In terms of standing out, I like the teal.
Yeah, I like the teal too. I feel like it feels rom-com-y, and I like a rom-com, so I felt like I knew what I was getting into just by looking at the book, which I appreciate as a reader.
And that's the point, yeah.
Yeah, like I want to know. I don't want any surprises. If it had been the picture and they had like, you know, a floofy petticoat and she was like pressed up against him and it was a picture, I'd know that's a different kind of book.
That's
so I'm happy that this book looks like what it looks like. I think we're out of time, but this was amazing. Thank you for popping my romance cherry.
You're welcome.
Though I just actually remembered that I have read 50 Shades of Grey.
Doesn't count.
Doesn't?
Well, not the first one.
Because there's not a happy ending.
Correct.
But I read the whole series.
All right. Well, that
counts. Okay. So I've read like three romances, 2.5. Anyways, guys, go check out The Ripped Bodice. If you're in LA, come visit the store. If you're not, check it out online. TheRippedBodiceLA.com.
Yeah. And all of our social media handles are The Ripped Bodice.
And that'll all be linked in the show notes. So I challenge you all to order your next book from The Ripped Bodice.
Yeah, and if you could, there's this place like to leave notes. Tell me that you heard me on the stacks. I don't know, throw in a pin or something fun.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, you can leave us a note and let me know you heard us here.
Yay, Leah! Thank you so much.
This was so fun.
We'll have to do this again next Valentine's Day.
Okay,
we have to make this a series.
Oh my god, I love it. Let's do it.
I'm so in. Okay, thank you so much, and you guys, we will see you in the stacks. That does it for us today. Thank you all so much for listening, and thank you to Leah Koch for being our guest. You can find everything we discussed on today's episode in the link in the show notes. Make sure to get your book recommendation read on air by sending us an email at askingthestacks@gmail.com. For more from The Stacks, please follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter, and check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. To join The Stacks Pack and get inside access to this show, head to patreon.com/thestacks. Thanks to Audible, listeners of this podcast get a free 30-day trial and a free audiobook download by going to audibletrial.com/thestacks. Make sure you are subscribed to this show wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, please take a moment to rate and review the show. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tagirigis. This show was created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.